OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business, a connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities, a connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. Now, I'm really looking forward to this next discussion. I want a Skype call today to Redmond, Washington in the US to talk to Ben Cutler of Microsoft, who is heading up something very exciting called Project Natick, a research project to determine the feasibility of, wait for it, subsea data centers. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm happy to be here, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Before we chat about Project Natick, though, I was having a look at your LinkedIn profile, and I see you're working on another project to do with holoportation. That sounds absolutely fascinating. What is that exactly?
So you can think of holoportation in some sense as a video conference, but instead of sending just sort of a image from one camera, we're capturing the full 3D content of a room. And what that allows you to do is for the participants, for example, to wear HoloLens, and then you will see your local environment, including the people there directly, and then you'll see the people from the other location as though they are holograms. So it allows you to actually work and interact with people almost as if you're in the same location.
Wow, okay. It sounds a bit like the Star Trek holodeck.
A little bit, but the people are not really there, and there's no substance to them. But it does give you the effect that we like, which allows people in remote locations to work together.
Right. Fascinating. So, Project Natick. There's a great website at natick.research.microsoft.com, and I highly recommend that anyone listening to this podcast goes and has a look at that, and especially the live cameras, which are fascinating to watch. I had them on my screen for about half an hour earlier, watching the fish swimming around. But Ben, subsea data centers, where did this idea come from originally, and why would you put a data center in the ocean?
These are both very good and interesting questions. The origin of this was actually with a Microsoft employee who earlier in his life was a U.S. Navy submariner, and so knew a lot about submarines and the potential advantages they might have for data centers. So that is kind of really how it got started. And as to why you might do that, we see basically four reasons. One of them is perhaps kind of obvious, which is really inexpensive and efficient cooling to help bring down cost. Other advantages we see are getting close to customers. Turns out that more than half the world's population lives very close to the ocean. So putting data centers offshore near major metropolitan areas brings them closer to our customers for better interactive experience as you look forward to new and richer interactive applications that are coming along. We also see advantages in rapid deployment. So today it can typically take a couple years to build a data center. And so our mantra in this is 90 days from decision to power on anywhere in the world. And then finally, we like this idea of co-location with renewable energies. Today, Microsoft is a carbon neutral company. And in fact, half of our data center power comes entirely from renewable energies, the rest with carbon offsets. And we're marching further and further down toward pure renewables. And so, for example, off the coast of South Africa, there's a lot of wave energy. So the idea of pulling energy from the motion of waves is a new thing, and there are a number of companies that are off developing devices to do that. So you can imagine in the future, Natick, for example, potentially deployed off the coast of South Africa, powered by wave energy generated right there, co-located with the data center.
Mm-hmm. Can you deploy these data centers? I mean, just looking at the energy saving potential around the cheaper, more efficient cooling of them, would you have to deploy these in cold waters, or could you, for example, deploy one in the warmer waters around the African coastline?
You can certainly go to warmer waters. There's a couple things here, one of which is much as when you get to the equator, you can see that things get warmer. It means it's more expensive to cool those data centers on land in the warmer waters, warmer regions of the world. So even if it costs us more to cool them in warmer waters, it's still a benefit compared to doing it on land. But the second thing to understand is that as you look around the world, the variation in the water, in the oceans, is much less than it is on land.
Yes.
And so, for example, at one point early on, we looked at Florida, which is southern United States. And it's you know, fairly warm down there. But even when we go to someplace like that that's pretty warm, if you're about 200 meters below the surface, the water is never warmer than about 15 Celsius. So even in very warm places, we can go and still get efficient cooling.
Okay, okay. So you're deploying, or you're rolling out this project, as I understand it, in two phases. Can you take us through those phases and what it is exactly that you guys have done to date?
So when we first started this, I think Microsoft historically is a computer and a software company. We're not a marine company. We don't really know much about the ocean. Water and computers tend not to be a good combination.
Yes.
And so the first thing we did literally was we took a small set of servers, 24, and we basically put them in the can and we kind of sunk them in the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was about 11 meters of water and it was right next to a research pier. So it was easy access and it was really a proof of concept. Just does this work? Can we cool it effectively? Can we survive in the ocean? And on the strength of that, we proceeded to a phase two, which is what we've recently deployed off the coast of Scotland. Mm-hmm. And so this is, rather than a proof of concept, which was phase one, this is, if you will, a demonstration at scale. So we have 864 servers. It's 12 computer racks. It's about a quarter megawatt of power. It's located actually in open ocean. And we intend to be in the water this time at least a year, maybe as much as 5 years. The first time around, we were in the water about 3.5 months.
Okay. So where exactly in Scotland have you done this?
We are off the Orkney Islands, which is, if you look at the UK and you go all the way north, it's the first patch of islands north of the mainland. And the reason that we are there is it's the European Marine Energy Center, which is the world's largest test site for offshore renewable energies, which is to say getting power from tidal energy or from wave energy. So it's a good place to go in terms of its test infrastructure. And because we have these different devices that are being tested by a range of companies up there, there is the opportunity in the future to directly connect to one of those and really be powered directly offshore. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're actually powered by the land grid, which in the Orkney Islands is actually 100% renewable energy, most of it coming from solar and wind and some smaller amount coming from these offshore energy devices.
Mm-hmm. And tidal energy, you say it's a relatively new field. Where are we in that process? And is Microsoft looking to develop that as well or work with partners?
So Microsoft, when it comes to electricity, we actually don't develop any technologies ourselves, nor do we buy energy devices or power plants from companies. We will work with utilities. But we are, of course, always very happy to see people developing new types of renewable energy, because as a voracious consumer of renewable energies, the more the better, both for us and our customers and for the planet.
So what have you learned so far from phase two in Scotland?
Let's see. So far, we learned a lot about actually deploying a much larger vessel than we did the last time. A big part of this, in order to make it work and to be able to do this rapidly, is to really understand the whole supply chain. So how do we take a bunch of servers, integrate them with these data centers in a way that we can very rapidly get them in the field? And so that means we have to learn a lot about ocean-going industries, people who take ships out, deploy things on the seabed. And historically, a lot of that has, of course, been the oil and gas industry or people laying intercontinental cables. And so for us, it's a learning experience to go and understand how does that work. What are the companies that we can work with? What are the challenges, whether they be technical or legal or, you know, other aspects of business? And so I think this is really an opportunity for us, as I said, demonstration of scale. And part of that is to understand what is that whole supply chain? How does it work? Do we understand it? Is it compatible with our goals?
So how long has the what do you call this device that you submerge in the ocean? Does it have a name? I know you used the term can before.
This one we call the Northern Isles, which is, if you will, a Scottish name for the island chains that are north of the mainland UK.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of technically what the thing is, it's a pressure vessel.
Pressure vessel.
So a pressure vessel is basically a large thing. It's typically a sphere, or in this case a cylinder, that is good at resisting the pressure of the ocean. And so if you look at a submarine, for example, inside that is this long cylinder, also called a pressure vessel.
How deep can it be placed in the water?
You can design these things depending on what your needs are. So when we think about deploying these, we're probably talking about depths of up to 200 meters.
Oh, wow, that's quite deep. That's quite deep.
It's pretty deep. You don't go scuba diving at that depth.
No. So how long has it been in the water now off the coast of Scotland?
Since basically the 1st of June, I think, is when we put it in the water. So it's been about 3 months. And so far, everything is running well. If you look at the cameras, where, as you mentioned earlier, the fish are swimming around, one of the things that you'll see is over time, we'll get more and more growth of marine life on the actual data center pressure vessel itself. And that's normal and that's expected. Yeah. One aspect that you get when you put things in the water is this notion of it's an artificial reef. And so over time, you'll get little microscopic things live on it, and then things that eat them will show up, and so on and so forth. And then eventually you get kind of macroscopic things that we can see that are there. You also notice that the fish, particularly kind of when the current is very strong, use it as shelter. So much as a natural reef in the water has certain beneficial effects for the local ecosystem, one of the things that we're curious about is, do we get that effect from this sort of a structure in the water or not? And so that's part of, if you will, the marine sciences aspect of this, is understanding our interaction with the environment.
So when you raise this thing in a few years' time, you could be bringing an entire ecosystem to the surface.
I will tell you that the first one that we did off the coast of California, which was 3 months, when it came out, boy, did it smell after a few days. You do bring up, you know, it's covered with barnacles and all sorts of other stuff.
Yes.
But that's the nature of the game if you put things in the ocean. And one of the goals is to do this in a way that is as environmentally friendly as possible. And so we look not just to be neutral, but explore ways that we can be additive in addition. And so this artificial reef idea is one aspect of that.
So what are the costs like here? I presume that the cost of this is something you're focusing on very keenly through this research project. What are the costs involved compared to building a regular data center?
So I think there's two ways to look at that, one of which is there's always a market opportunity aspect, which is to say, if we can go more rapidly, there's value to that. Try as we may, we can't always get the capacity we need in different regions of the world as quickly as we'd like to. But I think more generally, we do look at it as just, what is the cost of constructing these things, deploying them, operating them? And we think it actually will be favorable compared to what we do on land. And one of the reasons is, in a lot of ways, this structure is much simpler than we have in the land data center. If you've ever seen or been in a data center, and there's plenty of videos online, there's this enormous infrastructure for cooling and distribution of power. And so if you think about a modern data center, I have to pull the air in, I have to do something to cool it off, I run it over all the servers, and I send it back out. And so we have, in some cases, chillers, in other cases, just big fans and evaporative cooling systems. Our case is super, super simple. What we do is air blows through the computer racks, and it comes out hot, and it hits a heat exchanger. And that heat exchanger you can think of as like the radiator in a traditional internal combustion engine car. So in your car, there's this thing called the radiator. And what happens is your car has water flowing through the engine, and that water gets heated up as a process of keeping the engine cool, goes to the radiator, that cool air coming in the front of the car then cools off that radiator and the water inside it. So we have these heat exchangers in the back of the racks. It's kind of the inverse of that. It's hot air coming through the servers, hitting cold water coming from the ocean. That water is warmer going back out, and then it cools down the air for the servers. So that's the whole thing. It's this very short, simple loop. There are other aspects of this that are interesting. A big source of failures in data centers is corrosion. So we have oxygen and we have moisture. That causes problems with, say, when you plug in memory chips or network connectors and things like that. If you got a data center with 10,000 servers, an awful lot of connectors to worry about. Inside the Natick data center, it's a nitrogen atmosphere, so there's no oxygen, and it's very low moisture. So we think that will help with corrosion. We also have consistently cool temperatures in contrast to what happens in a lot of data centers today. And so part of this is not just the cost of the data center and its operations, but also what we think about in terms of reliability or longevity for servers may be better in this environment. And so one of the reasons for operating this for a long period of time is so we can collect the data to understand, is that true or not? Do we actually get better reliability in this kind of an environment?
I'm guessing it's too early to know that at this stage.
It's too early to know that at this stage. I can tell you that so far it's not worse than a land data center, but I think it will be one of those things that there's some errors or problems that you may see early on, and then there's others that develop over longer periods of time, and it's too soon to understand, is that better, is that worse, is that the same?
Yeah. Out of interest, what are you running in the data center in Scotland, the subsea data center? Are you running any commercial applications on it? Any customers live in there?
So this is really a research vessel, and so it has no customer data in it. We're running our own applications, and our in this case means Microsoft.
Yeah.
Right now it's running just things from the Microsoft research part of the company.
Okay.
But a little later this fall, it will be generally available to anybody inside the company to run their own applications on it. So it is, in some sense, a true, full, up-and-running data center, albeit a small one, and with a somewhat larger audience of users, if you will.
Right. Is there a lot of interest inside Microsoft to start to tinker with it?
It's an interesting thing. So in order to make this go, about 200 people across the company participated in this project in one way or another. And that ranged from early on people who were involved in procurement. And again, just as for us, we're learning about different things, they're learning about what's procurement mean in the marine industry. Mm-hmm. We had people who were involved in sourcing components, figuring out how to design electrical and cooling systems, people who do reliability analysis of the individual disk drives or screws or bolts or wires and things that go into data centers. Obviously, people on the communication side in the company and business development. So there's a lot of different people who worked on this. And in some sense, that's an expression of interest because none of those people work for me. I actually have a very small team of people. There are just five of us who are directly under my leadership in the company working on this, but this very large set of people who contributed in different ways to help make this successful.
Mm-hmm. So further phases, are you going to be deploying any more of these during the research phase?
Well, it's research, and so in some sense we have to sort of let what we learn guide what we do next, or if we just stop, if it turns out that we reach some roadblock that we, you know, indicates this isn't a good path to go down. If there is a next stage, it would probably be a larger deployment. So this is kind of a pretty small as data centers go. A lot of data centers today are, you know, many megawatts or at least a few megawatts. So I would expect that if we do next development, might be several times larger than what we're doing now. But again, it's too soon to really know if there is a next phase or not, because we are research. And of course, what goes on in the market and what makes sense is something else that is evolving over time.
I'm guessing it's also probably too early to comment on whether you think this technology will be commercialized.
We're research, and so in some sense, our purpose in research is to develop new tools for the cloud organization, and then they can decide if and how they would use it.
Okay. Ben, before I let you go, is there any meaning behind the name? And I've been calling it Natick, but you've corrected me. It's Natick. Is there any meaning behind the name?
It's the name of a town in the state of Massachusetts on the east coast of the United States. But it has no inherent meaning. It's just for whatever reason, in my immediate part of the company, we went through a phase where we were basically naming projects after random cities in Massachusetts. So there's no association.
Completely random. Okay. It's not like you came from Natick or anything.
No, but I have heard from people from Natick, Massachusetts, asking why we named it after their city. I've also heard from people in adjoining cities in Massachusetts asking if we'd name a project after their city. So it is an interesting thing. People pay attention to these things, and it matters to them in ways that we don't necessarily anticipate when we come up with these names.
Fascinating. Great stuff. Ben Cutler is heading up Project Natick for Microsoft. This has been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you, Duncan.